meeting, first monthly meeting agenda, Wednesday, October 9th, 2013, to order. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So you have to do that when the government shut down?
Yeah, they are. The rules still apply.
It's our kind of affairs.
Is there any additions to the agenda?
I don't have any, but our attorney's not here yet. I don't know if she'll want
An executive session or not?
Right.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Sounds good. I have nothing to add.
Is there a move for approving the agenda as written?
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda, approval of meeting minutes September 25th and operations reports for September.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
My second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Public comments not related to the agenda. Is there any public comments? Seeing no public comments, we'll move on to old business. Port Strategic Advisory Committee Commissioner's response.
We talked quite some length today when Eric Tays gave the presentation on what the staff put together for your response. So I don't know if when I put the agenda together, I wasn't sure.
Oh, if that was going to go as it did or not?
Right. You know, whether you would have more to say or any recommendations. Certainly, if you do, it's the time to do it. But I think. You can get some comments back to us here the next few days. We can get a draft out to you.
Yeah, so just to recap, if nobody was here when that happened, Eric developed a reply from the commissioners to the Strategic Advisory Committee, and we got it yesterday, and we reviewed it in detail. Eric went over it and told us his thinking on it, and we've agreed to do some revisions to said document. All three of us are in agreement on that, and get it back to Eric at the earliest possible date for revision, and that's what we're going to do with that.
I don't know if maybe end of business Friday to get some comments back, if that's too soon or not long enough, or
that'd be fine.
Yeah, then he could probably rework it on Monday and get it right back to you again. And
yeah, right.
Is that good for you, Dave?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because a bunch of us are going to be gone, remember, the latter part of the next week.
Yeah, I'd say end of business Monday, give us a weekend.
That'd be better. We'll tell Eric to expect it on Monday.
Okay. Good. And then we had this morning some ongoing discussions on the 2014 budget.
Again, kind of the same as the strategic committee. I presented my white paper this morning, so that's available. We will need some decisions from the, or directions anyway, from the commission here very shortly, in the next week or two, so Amy can put together a good draft. I'd like to shoot for maybe the 90% solution anyway. We've got one more October meeting. Remember, we've got to hold at least one public hearing, and we normally would do that the first meeting in November, but we have till the second meeting. We have to have the budget approved and down to Olympia by the first week in December for the treasurer and everything. So,
yeah, Amy and I were talking about that earlier. That certainly seems doable. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
but I really need that. Mass 90 report.
Yeah,
like we've got that. That is very valuable, and we've been without it now for quite some time. And I find a lot of these questions very difficult to answer without that piece of information.
Yeah, we just got this white paper this morning. I'd like to digest that a bit too.
So. Right.
Yeah, and the other thing we can do is prepare a couple of different versions of the budget. I don't think that'd be too difficult, would it?
Yeah. Didn't we ask last time to have a version with
nothing?
No increases. But I mean, you also indicated that we wanted to see a version with a cost of living increase incorporated into it. You said you could either add a column or do a budget like that. So
we could do a 1% tax increase if you wanted to.
Yeah, seeing those different scenarios would be really helpful.
At what point do we want to put the white paper and budget on the website?
I would say the white paper is a public document. Mm-hmm. You know, on the
It can go on anytime as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
We handed it out to the people that were here this morning.
So draft budget, when can we expect that up? Just so
I mean, we can put the one that we've been working on up there now, knowing that, I mean, that's
it's just good
definitely
for people
draft,
to be able to look at.
And we just need to be very clear that this is just a status quo budget.
Correct.
With no commission direction as to...
But let's give them the same budget we've been giving them all along. Let's give them the Mass 90 budget. This is yet another document to people that have complained rigorously that our material presented is unreadable. So I would say that the Mass 90 budget is the one we've been giving them all along, and the one where it's got depreciation marked out, you know, as a line item and so forth. Just not to confuse the issue, I mean... Don't you guys agree? I mean, this is different than what we've been getting. This isn't the same document we've been getting all along for the past 3 years. And I think we finally have the issue resolved with people being able to understand it, or at least we were headed that direction.
Yeah.
If we give them something else,
that would confuse them.
I think that we might end up with a lot more questions than answers.
And that's doable now that our network is down here.
Right.
And my programs actually work.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, up until last week, the one program we didn't work, so.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I can get that.
Sue, go ahead and put the white paper up. What the white paper is every year I put together a white paper. It's a 1922 term from Winston Churchill. Just my perspective on the budget. And... with recommendations, you know, for the commission to digest and assess and their decision.
So I think that pretty much brings old business to a close. Carolyn, we did not know if you wanted to have an executive session or not this afternoon, so we thought we would ask you when you arrived.
We can have a brief one.
Half an hour?
Oh, 15 minutes.
Yay.
Oh, good. Okay, so I'd like to add that to the agenda at this late date, and it's for legal matters?
Correct, litigation.
Correct, all right. So we'll add that, and so
no
that
decision,
will happen.
No action, no decision, thank you.
So we will go to new business. Item number A is the recent boatyard fire.
It's going on 2 weeks now since the fire started. And I think it's an opportunity. You know, we're in the process of revising our rules and regulations. And I think there's a lot of opportunity here to... We'll never be able to prevent a fire, be in the boatyard or in the marina, but we need to do a lot better than what we're doing. And what I'd like to do is a couple of things. We've got, have you got extra copies?
I do.
For all the commissioners?
There.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get those. So this is a copy of our current yard agreement that is signed by each boat owner or their approved agent when they haul out. I think I sent a copy of it over to Carolyn. I think we need to have a real critical eye, review this, see if there's things we can change or add. And also in our rules and regs, the formal document. But staff's been discussing that we'd like to form a very small committee. We've talked to Jim Mopin about insurance issues. Have him on the committee. I was talking to David Griswold last week. He said he'd like to be on the committee, and would like to get a boat owner who frequently hauls out but does their own work. Because that was the situation here. We had a boat owner doing the work, not marine trades. And just kind of talk through this, what can we support you that will still keep the yard an open yard, but still protect not just the taxpayers' assets, but other boaters located around the facility. facilities. So this is a case where, yeah, the insurance issue has come up over and over again over the years. Actually, our current rules and regs that are the old ones say that prior to haul out, the vessel owner or his/her authorized representative shall provide proof of liability insurance satisfying the requirements of these rules and regs. And we've never really held anybody to that standard.
But that's not just for in the water, that's for...
This is the yard. This is the yard, paragraph 4, or 5.01.030, hoist/yard tenancy agreement required. It talks about this agreement that you have to sign. Mm-hmm. And then, but also in the same paragraph, that you've got to show proof of liability insurance. The problem with liability insurance for Jim Mopan is a lot of these people, no insurance company would ever insure them. And I think the case of this individual, that was probably the situation. So I don't know whether this is something that we should need. I'm of the mind that if we improve our inspections and be somewhat draconian, I'm afraid, keeping the boat owners' feet to the fire on cleaning up on a daily basis, not allowing totally enclosed structures that are locked, that port staff can't access to inspect to see what materials are in there, how their electrical lines are hooked up, etc. Yeah, we need to look at all those different aspects. So I'd like to form this committee and kind of review it, you know, bring back some suggestions to you, and go from there, but I'm sure you all have, Steve and I were at a conference and I get the email from Amy saying that your boat yard and there's this plume of black smoke coming out of the middle of it. You know? So we were working with this individual, Doug was. We had given her a timeline to clean the place up, a few days short of that timeline when the fire happened. And I think what we do with this individual work project, we need to discuss separately. I don't think that boat's recoverable. That's my opinion. Most of the marine trades I've talked to say the same thing. The individual wants to stay in the yard. The surrounding boat owners don't want that individual near them. So, I'll make that call. But, I guess the other thing is as we move forward and review these rules and regs, and Dave brought up a good point, we have it in the moorage, we got to make sure it's in the yard as well. Port staff needs to have the authority to board all vessels to check for, safety issues. Now, obviously, if the vessel's locked, we need to coordinate with the boat owner and everything, which we would do, but we need to implement that. But we need to be a lot more strict. You know, some of the boats around the boat that actually caught fire, right now the agreement says on a daily basis you'll keep your boat neat and tidy with nothing stored under the boat, etc. And there's a lot of boats out there that are junkyards in and around the boat. So checking some of the other boat yards, Edmonds, Swantown, down at Port of Olympia. It's hard to compare because we're truly an open yard. Those yards are fenced at 5 o'clock. The fence gate closes and is locked. They don't allow any liveaboards. We allow liveaboards. I think that needs to be relooked. It's hard to compare. They don't require insurance at the other yards, but they're really, really strictly controlled. Is what goes on in those yards. You can't really compare the private yards because the private yards essentially don't allow do-it-yourselfers, except in very, very limited basis. You know, the yard itself is doing the work.
Right.
You know, which is totally different from our model where we just haul the boats out and provide the storage and the marine trades or boat owners do the work. So there's a lot to review here. I'd like to discuss it. Any thoughts the commission has, any direction?
concerning. If we were to require liability insurance for the boaters that worked in our yard, basically what we'd be doing is just chopping our foot off.
Well, you would eliminate
a large amount of business.
Some number, right. And we did get, I sent you forwarded the email we got from one boat owner that brought that up.
Right.
You know, he's got liability insurance and he can't believe that we're not, you know, demanding that of other boat owners. So he also suggests that we put the uninsured boats in one area.
Uh-huh.
Put the insured people somewhere else. But that's going to be a hard thing to do, too.
Well, I know at Townsend Bay Marine, when I worked there, when we signed a shipyard contract with the boat owner, it required them to have liability insurance. And I would venture to say that that was driven by our insurance policy.
Yeah.
For the boatyard itself. What is our insurance policy's reaction? Do we have liability insurance on the boatyard, the port of Port Townsend?
On our facilities that we own, might be able to address that better, Amy.
They would like to see insurance required.
Of course, right. So wasn't that an argument for not requiring tailgaters to have liability insurance because they'd be covered by the boat owner's liability insurance?
To some extent.
Yeah, no, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So under what circumstance, like if a guy falls off a scaffolding and ends up in the hospital, does he turn around and sue the Port of Port Townsend?
He could. Yeah, we're always...
And that's covered by our liability insurance?
No. You know, I think our insurance would fight it. You know, but nobody can stop anybody from suing somebody else.
And well,
Port,
true.
Port, just like any government, is perceived as a deep pocket. And, you know, in our yard agreement, you know, it's very clear that Port, you know, you'll hold Port harmless on any, you know, damage, loss, fire, etc. So, you know, how well that would hold up in a lawsuit, I don't know.
There's consideration for it.
What's that?
There's consideration for it. I mean, they're only able to access the boatyard in exchange for the hold harmless. So.
Yeah, we won't haul them out if they don't sign this agreement or they agree to hold us harmless.
Also, on number 10 in this agreement, it says the owner will not maintain anything that may be dangerous to life, limb, or permit any objectionable noise to his boat. But that could include dangerous to life or limb, and that could include electrical hazards.
Yeah, and you know, that's where we need the ability to access the project site to check for bad wiring. And, you know,
yeah, it seems like it would be, you could interject a sentence that allows the port staff to enter the boat or access the boat to determine whether it's unsafe.
So if we did require liability insurance, how would that affected the Western Flyers haul out? That would never have happened? I mean, there's no way he's getting insurance on that.
Yeah. Of course, that's the situation where the guy hasn't paid us anyway.
Well, I think that we're confusing the issue of liability insurance for the boat or for the person. It's like when you're...
Well, for the boat.
Right, but what I'm getting at is it not necessarily needs to be for the boat. It could be that the person is held liable for whatever damages him or his property causes. So, in other words, you're not really insuring the boat. The boat could be just a pile of timbers. But if the guy says, I'm good for the insurance liability, for the liability that occurs because my pile of timbers catches on fire, then that would be the same thing. And so then, I think that's what Larry was saying. Jim indicated that some people just aren't that fiscally responsible to be able to get that kind of liability insurance. Although I have to wonder to myself, when a bail bondsman works, you know, they're taking people at horrible risks and they're ensuring that they're going to be worth this money. So I'm thinking there's got to be some sort of an insurable thing that would insure the person, which this guy at the Western Flyer would be ultimately liable for stuff we've got a lot of money, rather than the actual boat. And I think maybe we could start looking at something like that.
Well, he's got to have insurance or a bond.
Yeah. Yeah. Bond is always another option, too. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you know, we require $300,000 of liability insurance to have the permanent mortgage here in the marina. Yeah, we don't care about the boat. If you're your boat catches fire, you know, that's your problem. Mm-hmm. $300,000 is to pay for damage to us for our, you know, loss of our docks and facilities, mm-hmm. to the adjacent boat owners for damage to their boats. That's what the insurance is for. And that would be the same thing in the yard.
Yeah, that would be the same thing as if it's not insuring the boat, it could be a bond that the guy gets that says, I'm good for this. Even though my boat's not insurable, I'm good for whatever liability occurred.
At the end of the project, you know, you get your money back. And
we just finished a recent thing, though, with a tenant who's a pretty good tenant, good standing, that was not bondable. The bonding companies are really looking at that closely.
Right.
You almost have to have as much assets as you're looking for a bond. Yeah. So if you don't have $50,000 in assets, they're not going to bond you.
It's gotten more difficult, you know, with the recession and all that than it was, you know, 5, 6, 7
Well, it wouldn't necessarily have to be everyone gets a bond. It could be if the boat's insurable, it could be the boat gets insurance. Or if the boat's not insurable, that could be a bond. And if neither, then maybe we should be working on their name.
And I don't, you know, a lot of the boat owners, you know, it's like anything. You know, 90% of the boat owners are responsible. They do the right thing. They have liability insurance because they even more here. Most other marinas require liability insurance now, and every year more and more of them do. So the guys and gals that have that are actively boating are probably okay. You know, it's when these quasi-derelicts or derelicts come in and they've got a dream that they're going to restore it. And I got to tell you, every time we see these, we all have that gut feel that, you know, there's going to be a problem with this person at some point in the future. Because, you know, they don't have the wherewithal to finish the project. And, you know, they're constantly, you know, 30 days behind, 60 days behind. We're trying to work with them constantly. You know, and poor result falls on Gene's desk to do that. And,
right.
In this case, the individual is behind in payments and... And that may help resolve the whole issue. You know, now we do have a derelict deposit of $7,000 on this boat, which probably would cover the cost that we have to demolish what's left.
Oh.
But that boat really needs to move from that current location because there's a lot of contamination now. We need to get in there and probably scrape up the dirt and replace it and everything else. So
what's the next step in this process?
Well, for the individual, I talked to her last Friday and told her that I'm going to need a formal plan on what she's going to do with the vessel. And I want to talk to you folks first. I need to send her a letter to that effect. She's been in and talked to Doug several times and Shannon. The story keeps changing a little bit. I'm not sure what her intent is now and what her wherewithal financially to do anything with it. So I'm going to go ahead with that, unless you don't want me to for some reason.
Well, our number 9 specifies that the owner understands and agrees that the port may move the vessel at any time for purposes of utilizing its storage area better or more safely.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I assume what's left could be picked up.
Doug's worried about it falling apart.
Really?
I mean, he picks
it
up.
I don't
think it looks pretty solid steel.
It's built to Navy specs,
yeah.
So it's tougher than it needs to be.
Well, we'll talk to her, but I'd like to go ahead with this committee and come up with some recommendations.
Yeah, I think a committee would be a good idea because it does affect marine trades.
Yeah, yeah,
and do this quickly.
The other guy that you might want to talk to is the guy on the Nona S, the fiberglass boat that was in front of the blue sailboat.
Uh-huh.
He's been having an eye on this situation he's been hauled out there for a couple of years, but he fishes on the season, but he's been working on his boat there for a couple of years, so I think he might have some
insight.
Definitely.
And we're also still waiting for some sort of report from the fire marshal. We haven't seen that yet. But, you know, the story during the corner dug, it seemed to be electrical in this case, which could have easily been prevented if staff was able to get in. It was totally locked.
Well, we were a day away from getting inside of it, or 2 days away.
Yeah.
Well, I think we definitely need to make access a priority.
Yeah.
And I think that we also, in light of your other, you know, looking at Swamptown and those other ones where they're nice and clean, you know, this one had become locked. It was like a de facto storage room that they were getting for free for their... We can't allow that. We need to have if we have less flammable stuff like paint cans and gas cans and crap like that laying around, then.
Well, some of the other yards, like Edmonds, has a gallon limit. You know, no more than 5 gallons of flammable material can be on site at any given time. They also have $100 per incident fine.
Oh, when the spill occurs?
Well, no, and you know, we come by and you've got it's 5 gallon drum of some flammable material. We say you've got to get rid of that, and we claim you've got to get rid of it, and you know, you get a fine. So, I don't know if that's something we want to implement or not.
Well, that's a good question for the committee too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I'm going to push that we do not allow totally enclosed structures except in very specific. Like the YTB tug is totally enclosed right now as they're sandblasting. So we have to do that from an environmental standpoint, but that'll come down as soon as the sandblast is over with.
So how many enclosures down are there down there in the...
Walking around on Friday, there's only two. There's a schooner down about 5 spots from your location. Like these painting in there, but you can access it. You know, there's a flap at the... that you can easily, it's not a, like this one at Burn, had an actual door frame and a door with a padlock on it. So there's not too many. I kind of like the way the, along the fence line, that boat owner put a shelter over the boat, but it's up on eco blocks. So it's protected from the elements, but walking by, you can see the whole length of the wall on the ground to see what's under there. So that's about where we stand. I don't know if you guys want to chime in, Al. It's going to fall on your shoulders primarily to be out there.
Well, I think there's plenty of regulations in place right now, procedures and regulations. It's just going to be a matter of enforcement. And then as your environmental compliance officer, I'd ask you to have your support too, because in policing sites a bit more aggressively, no doubt you'll be getting some phone calls from some folks that aren't so enamored with the policy promulgation like that. So I just ask for your support if we do move forward with the more aggressive policing like that.
But I don't want to add anything to our tenancy agreement or the rules and regs that we can't enforce. There's nothing worse than, you know, it puts staff in a really bad position.
But I think an open shelter and the ability to for the port staff to make any necessary examinations to determine if there's safety issues.
And hazardous material storage.
Right.
So Carolyn, you'll probably need to kind of rework our tenancy agreement. And
love to be involved. It's a good opportunity also to just make sure. I'm sure Al's doing a good job of this already. Make sure these rigs are consistent with the boatyard permit requirements too.
Well, the other thing is Al just got a copy of the fire code, which might influence what we allow and can't allow.
So. Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
Any further discussion, Dave?
No, but I think this should be probably aggressively pursued.
Yeah, I want to bring, you know, get this really wrapped up here in the next 2 weeks. Absolutely. The outside.
Yeah, I think that non-ask guy would be worthwhile to have the committee.
I just wondered if we should talk to the Marine Trades, because you know a lot of these regulations that Al's asking for our support in enforcing is going to be impacting Marine Trades. Al's going to come by and say, you can't be storing that thing here because it's liable to blow up or whatever. And then that's going to be onerous on whoever he's telling it to. But really, the Marine Trades need to understand that we're doing this to protect them so that we can keep a boatyard open. And so
I don't think anybody in the Marine Trades would be.
Yeah, they all seem pretty supportive. I've talked to quite a few of them here, and they've been in talking to Doug and Shannon, and I think they're not the issue. It's the boat owner.
We're on the same page.
But you'll still have a Marine Trades person on.
Yeah, we're going to write the
committee.
Like to sit on it, so.
We want to make Al's job as easy as we can.
All right.
Then new business B, approval of warrants.
We have warrant number 51810 through 51835 for the amount of $116,694.84 for payroll and benefits. And warrants 51836 through 51902 for the payment of $119,401.72 for accounts payable. And 51903 through 51904 for the amount of $114,624.30 for accounts payable. That was the that was the Caicos one. So I move that we approve the warrants as read.
My second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Staff comments?
You all?
Been asked by the WPPA to come to the small ports conference, which I wasn't going to go to, but this is an important topic. They want me to give a presentation on how a small port like ours deals with the small works roster. So it's actually a very good opportunity for the Port of Port Townsend to really work with other small ports to talk about small works roster and how we get jobs completed in a legal manner. So I'm looking forward to that on Thursday.
Didn't we turn that over to a service?
Well, just the MRC, the Municipal Resource Service Corporation, but all they do is administratively
deal with the list.
Just have the list. So that meets the state auditor's requirement that we have a small works roster that we can access. But it's up to us, if we need a roof repaired, that we contact three roofing companies that are on the list. To get bids and everything and go through the selection process. But there's a lot of, as we dig into it more, and Carolyn recently researched, the ability to do day labor. There's some flexibility in the state law that, for really small projects, you don't necessarily need to go to a small works roster. There's some dollar limits, et cetera. As Dave and I were talking before the meeting, this is although we're considered a small port, there's a lot of other ports that are very small and in very, very rural areas, like Port of Othello, in the middle of the state, population 1,100, that sort of thing, where it's difficult to maintain a small works roster because you don't have the mass of businesses to even be on the roster. So you need the MRC to do that for you. So it'll be an interesting topic. Three things. I've been asked to go to the Port of Seattle tomorrow morning. This actually came out of when we were down at Skamania.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Albro is leading the charge. He's a Port of Seattle commissioner with the Washington Tourism Alliance and is trying to get the Washington Public Port Association to get some legislation going this coming session, which will be in January, to help tourism, and specifically helping ports that play in the tourism arena. And we're invited because, we are a tourism port to a large extent with Point Hudson and the RV park, but especially it came up on everybody's radar, we started hosting the cruise ships this year, and possibly next year, two different cruise liners that will be visiting Port Townsend. So I'll go over there and see what they've got to say and what kind of legislation they're proposing and brief that back to you. It's really kind of part of the whole marketing thing that we've been talking about, too. So,
what was the state of Washington spending on tourism before they swept the funds?
Oh, it's about 10,
12
million? 8
million
is their budget.
Right, so this is a way to get a little tiny piece of that back.
Right, because they totally zeroed it out, did away with the office.
Right.
And the striking data point is that Washington State has zero money for tourism. But when you look at Alaska, British Columbia, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, Wyoming, Oregon, they vary from about 60 million in one case and a low of about 15 million. And we're right in the center of this donut with nothing for tourism. So something has to be done, you know, because that's a huge, huge industry for the, especially the Puget Sound area. So we'll see where that goes. The other thing is I got an email, and Sue's already acknowledged it and sent my bio in. The AAUW, help me, Sue.
University of Women.
That's what it is. They're holding a panel in November. They've invited me to be on the panel, along with Peter Quinn, David Timmons, and a couple others, to talk about our economic report card and some of the areas they would like to have addressed, their job growth and retention, career path jobs, commercial tax base, quality of life considerations, outreach and marketing efforts throughout the county, business success stories, and opportunities for desired growth. I don't know if anybody's ever defined desired growth, but so if you have any thoughts, mid-November, anything you think I ought to present from a pork perspective, I'll email that to you. And that's all I have. Oh, airport update. Seal coat tomorrow. They're finishing the hydroabrasion of the current markings on the runway. So seal coat tomorrow, restripe it on Friday. And if the weather is like today, we hopefully will have it reopen 5-ish on Friday afternoon.
So. Out there working.
But the NOTAM is till 9 p.m.
But the NOTAM is till 9. And we'll turn the runway lights back on Friday night. Craig's standby to do that. But we got to keep in mind, so we can't reopen the runway until the center line is striped down the runway. That's an FAA requirement. But this is not the final striping. There'll be one more day, probably in about a month. It'll be a little easier to deal with because it just takes, you know, a couple hours for the striper, which is kind of like what they do to stripe the road, but it's mm-hmm. special paint. And at that time, they'll apply these glass beads, which provide a reflective surface. So they're easier to see at nighttime. So there will be one more closure. It'll just be for like a half a day or a day, in about a month. So that's it.
Public comments. Pete, the gentleman right behind you got his hand up faster than you. Go ahead, sir.
I'd like to, my name is Diego Anderson. I live on Maristone Island. I've lived there since about 2007. I'd like to make a comment and recommendation on evidently a poor policy procedure. Let me give you the background. A friend of mine is a captain on a 125-foot schooner. He wanted to come in here. He wanted a reservation. He was denied a reservation. He's told that that's a policy that the port doesn't have, allowing him to make a reservation. Now, I would ask anyone in this room, if you go anyplace and you rent a motel room, whether it's Motel 6 or Four Seasons, you are given a reservation without that. And if you don't get a reservation, you don't go there. And he's just told to come in with a 125-foot schooner that's almost 250 tons. Now, I went down there Monday night, opened up enough space, and he came in. There was enough space at the dock for two more vessels his size. He's been to the Aleutians, he's been at Dutch Harbor, he's been at Seward, Alaska, he's been at Ketchikan, Juneau, Sitka. He's got reservations in San Francisco and San Diego. This is the only port he's never been given reservations in. In 8 years, he's got 130,000 nautical miles. So I would ask you, devise a system so people that want to come into the port can have the reservation. Point two, you're only charging $1 a foot. It's too cheap. You got a megabot yacht that size, he's paying between $1 and $3 a foot in a night. He doesn't need power. You don't have enough of it. And thirdly, and that's the last thing, when he went to the office, he didn't get a single piece of literature about this community. Nothing about the port's capabilities, nothing about the marine trades, nothing about the shopping or restaurant opportunities in town. Nothing. That's sad. It's sad for the community.
Thank you, Vigo. Pete?
Quick question. On the runway resurfacing, if tomorrow is raining, do they cancel? What are the parameters that they can code in?
The worst case scenario is we may have to extend the note in due time. Worst case. So we seal code on Friday. We're going to get the job done this week. And we're hoping to get it done by Friday night. But worst case scenario is Saturday, the final strike.
It is a water-based emulsion.
Yeah.
So it has to be a dry, not be sunny, but the surface has to be.
Yeah, so it's cloudy, but just not sunny.
Yeah, cloudy's fine, as long as it's not raining.
Brad?
Hi, Willie. In regards to this new fire committee that you're proposing to put together, obviously this, you know, BMPs that you already have in place are, you know, a huge factor, and it's been, I know it's been a challenge for staff to employ those BMPs, make sure they're enforced with all the boat owners, as well as the tenants and people that work here as well. But I gotta say, you know, it's, there could be some sort of an improvement. Maybe it's a lack of staff. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but you walk around the yard, you can find all kinds of things that are, you know, clearly demonstrates the port is not following its own BMPs. Simple as that, both environmental and safety. A prime example is I just walked through yesterday, and I walked through past numerous electrical stations that had modified like 3-amp plugs that somebody had snipped off a 15 or 20 amp extension cord and wired into it. You know, again, you know, it's against your BMPs. And several of the electrical stations had fire extinguisher enclosures with no fire extinguisher there. One of them was right over by the burned up boat. Walk over there, open it up, there's no fire extinguisher, and the fire was a week and a half ago. So, I mean, this is some pretty basic fundamental things that, you know, we could all work together on and make sure that's covered, but there's no excuse for not having the fire extinguisher replaced. And that's not the only location that's missing a fire extinguisher. So I just want to emphasize that you already have a lot of policies in place. You know, it'd be nice to see some sort of a reorganization where, you know, you're not trying to ask more out of your yard guys or something, because those guys are going like crazy all day long. So it's to try and get them to do some of this policing, you know, is probably not maybe necessarily the answer, but there's got to be some sort of control measure, inspection process, whatever. But to not even have a fire extinguisher there, it's unbelievable. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Somebody are stolen every year. It is an issue, and you're right. It, you know, keep replacing them left and right,
So who does police that?
Larry Ozzie's group goes through the yard and does that kind of stuff. It's a combination.
Yeah. But it's a constant job, too. If we were to be really serious about inspections, not just in the yard, but the marina, and not just this marina, but Point Hudson and the RV park and Cool Scene and the airport have issues too. I could easily employ a full-time person just inspecting.
That's maybe what that used to happen.
And that, I totally agree with you. It's a constant problem.
I mean, keep reinventing the wheel over and over again. You've already got these policies in place. You just need to follow it.
Well, can we go back to the reservations thing? We have a reservation system at Point Hudson. We just don't have a slip big enough for 100.
No way. That was that big schooner that was out here on your dock. Well, it was still here this morning. I talked to the captain yesterday about it, and he wanted to go down all the way to the end. I'm not making excuses or anything. It's just that it's an awful busy time for the yard. You've got all the commercial guys coming back from Alaska. And we're hesitant to put somebody there for multiple days, taking up space for boats that are trying to get hauled out. And I was told that he draws at least 10 feet. So you can't use the very far end of the marina because at zero tide, should be heeled over to the side. But it's, you know, it's a policy thing. I told him, I said, it's something that the commission needs to review again. We don't accept reservations at the boat haven because it's all permanent moorage, and we never know what slip is going to be available at any given time. Unlike Point Hudson, we'll take reservations, you know, a year in advance, but we're limited, you know, to about 80 or 90 foot boat around here.
Yeah, so for most people traveling, unless they have something bigger than a 90 foot boat, we do accept reservations.
And I told the captain, I said, you know, I would like him to come back, and I said, please give me a call ahead of time directly. And gave him my personal number, so. But it's something we ought to look at.
Then on to commissioner comments. Steve, do you have anything further?
Yes. I went to a Puget Sound Anglers meeting last night, and we talked about a lot of stuff, one of them being the fish cleaning stations, and I gave the opportunity to the Puget Sound Anglers to be able to donate a fish cleaning station to the boat yard, and they said they'd happily do that.
Good deal.
So they're going to get a fish cleaning, they're going to donate the money to have a fish cleaning station put in, put a little plaque donated by the PSA.
Absolutely good.
And they're feeling good to be able to do that, and it'll help us out too. Also, we were talking about a little bit later, I know that I was here when our salmon season got cut short this year. And this year was the first year it got cut short since we had the thing reinstituted from an 11-year hiatus. And I didn't even realize I had caught a whole bunch of fish, so I wasn't actively fishing when they cut it short. And suddenly I had people who weren't even fishermen asking me what happened, and I didn't know. But apparently the Tammy, for example, noticed that the reservations for people in the boat haven just went down, to just shut, and the boat ramp usage went way down. And of course, when you have a lot less people coming through because your boat, you're looking like a ghost town, that means the rest of the community where those guys have been buying gas and staying in motels and so forth, we're also seeing that. So I'm taking it upon myself and for the fishing club to see if we can figure out some actual economic numbers of what happened from the premature closure of salmon fishing. And I think that since we're the port's putting in this infrastructure like fish cleaning stations, Metro Boat Lane and things like that, and we've been actually doing really well with the attracting Puget Sound anglers for fishing in the blackmouth derbies and halibut seasons, you know, times that are off season, that I think it'd be something worthwhile that if we discover that there's a political process that Jefferson County is missing out on, which I suspect is going to be the case, and that's with the fish season setting process that happens at Port Falcon, north of Falcon process, that we might want to somehow participate or endorse some, I'm not sure what, the people that are in there setting the process. But I think that since we're made part of the infrastructure that gets the people here, we need to make sure that we're not putting all this infrastructure in to have the rug pulled out from under us by fish and wildlife. So I think it would be useful. I'm going to start looking into it, but I think maybe in the future we'll have some more work we can do on working with fish and wildlife. That's my commissioner comment.
Yeah, at least we can weigh in on it.
Yeah.
And say, hey, don't forget about the grocery store.
Yeah.
Dave, commissioner comments?
Just one, I'm still in the process of trying to put my ducks in a row so we can address the Department of Ecology director with a request for a sit down with it and various local entities.
Oh, so the one you met at the meeting?
I'm still trying to put that together, and I hope to do that before I'm ushered out of here. I mean, it's down to the consensus seems to be is have one elected and one hands-on person from each jurisdiction to, and I'm getting email addresses from those, from the city and the county and the PUD and us, and when I get it all together, I'll ask the commission to maybe assist me in directing Larry to send a letter to the director of the OE.
Invite her up.
Invite her or her, whoever her reps are.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna say, we might end up getting, you know, deputy of some sort, or, you know, some department head elsewhere in the, she doesn't seem to, I know Washington Public Ports Association has invited her to a couple of events, and...
And she hasn't shown?
She hasn't shown, but,
She sure seems eager that day she spoke to them.
I know, you know, all the people, all the representatives that are there.
Yeah, well, one of the previous employee of DOE said she'd probably, the department heads would probably send up a SWAT team or something to, deal with this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just an opportunity to open a dialogue with DOE, I think is worthwhile.
Yeah, we just need to, you know, have, you know, what's the objective here, what's the goal, you know, why are we doing that?
How can we assist each other?
Couple of comments, I think it's about time that we really did think about another person to help Al. Because a lot of the stuff we've been talking about could be solved with, systematic inspections with checklists and margin orders. And fill out the checklist each and every day, or each and every 2 days, or whatever. A lot of these really simplistic issues could just be nipped in the bud.
Well, and I mentioned that in my white paper, in a roundabout way, that, you know, for our size port, having visited most of the other ports, we're operating with a far smaller staff, given the number of facilities, that we run. You know, a lot of them don't have airports, a lot of them don't have boat yards, they just have marinas and industrial parks, that sort of thing.
If we do increase the staff, then we increase our expenses, you know.
But, I'm just gonna say, it becomes a budget issue.
There's been an effort to decrease expenses.
Because keep in mind, as a government entity, if we hire somebody, it's not just the direct salary. We have to also do life insurance, medical, dental, you know, all the L&I costs and...
Well, it's time we nipped this problem in the bud, and we haven't done it. We've been talking about the fire since April the 20th. At our April 24th meeting, we've had just pretty much the same discussion, and the boat burned up. So it's time we acted, right or wrong, we need to move on this issue. And it's a two-pronged issue, it's safety and ecology. And, they're both just as nasty, and I simply don't see where one guy is gonna inspect this boatyard on a daily basis.
Well, and the other advantage, if we had somebody, you know, when you got remote sites like Cool Scene, you got boat ramps, you know, there's other issues that happen, like out at the ramp at Gardner a couple of weeks ago. Suddenly a trailer with a boat, you know, derelict, shows up down
there. Oh, is that derelict out there?
Now it's disappeared again. Al went out and looked at it, and I went out on my way back from swim.
It did look like a derelict to me.
Well, it's now been relocated.
It looked like somebody needed a parking place for a couple of days. And there's not a lot going on at that ramp.
But, you know, other stuff happens at these sites. You know, people dump stuff. They, you know, leave a derelict vehicle. You know, Quill Scene, since we're not down there every day, you know, it'd be nice to have somebody that at least once a week swings through there to make sure, you know, things are still standing and the lights are on. And, you know, especially in that case where Jim is, you know, still under the weather with the surgery and everything and can't, you know, do a lot of the work, so. But
And the other thing, you know, I would like us to direct the port director to take action on this environmental and safety issue at this time, to take action. We've talked about it, let's take action. Let's add a man to Al's department.
Yeah, I was reading this white paper, I looked at that, probably like you wanted me to, and said, well, we're running pretty lean on that one. I don't know, like running lean would cause us to miss something, and I was going to perhaps bring that up after I read just the whole white paper, but I think it got run.
That was the whole purpose of.
So I make a move that we add an employee to Al's position to enhance the safety and ecological BMP management situation in the port at this time.
I'll write the job description.
Well, do we have a second?
Is that a motion?
Yeah, a motion.
Okay, I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So this would be, so we'd have to change our organizational chart also. So this would be a position under Al's direction?
Sure.
Okay. You go for that, Al?
I wanted to make things easy for you.
We're building an empire, Al.
Now, the other, well, we'll set up the job description.
I think that's pretty positive direction.
I'm just not sure we got a big enough vehicle fleet. This person really should have a dedicated vehicle that he or she can rely on.
Well, the tricycle works.
Tricycle works dang good, I think.
And the other issue that I wanted to bring up was, for the better part of 13 years, I struggled with no reservations. I mean, I struggled. I mean, I brought in lots of boats over 100 feet long, and it was just, you don't dare cross the moorage office. You have to work with the moorage office. It works much better that way. But I took to reserving the work pier, because you can reserve that thing, but it's only, what is it, 70 feet long or so?
90.
And I would really, I think that we are missing an opportunity if some of these larger boats do sail by, to tie them up at the linear dock and be able to have reservations out there. I can't see where that would be that difficult, and shouldn't our new software system facilitate that also? Very well.
We just have to move people around. We don't know where people are.
That's the biggest thing. We, you know, for the boat haven, the Point Hudson's a different, you know, we can do reservations down there easily.
Sure.
You just never know what spaces are going to be. Yeah, 125 foot is a big boat for this little marina.
It sure is.
And
but how many did we bring in at Townsend Bay Marine?
Yeah.
You know, and every time was the same. You know, they call me when they're out here at the point and say, gee, we'd like to come in and spend about $30,000 a month with you for 6 months.
And that's why I told the captain to please give me a call ahead of time, meaning days ahead of time. That way we have some flexibility to move people around or leave space open and that sort of thing.
To leave 150 foot of dock empty all the time for that one or two times a year, we're going to get 150 foot boats, going to be tough.
Right.
So I mean,
right.
I'm going to put a 30 foot boat out there, and then 125 foot boat's going to want to be there. And so it's slip management. We can do anything you want, but it's going to stay fallow a long time.
And the other issue is the far end of the marina isn't deep enough for a deep keel boat either.
Right.
Far side, but the long dock on the D side is.
He would have been much better off going to Union Wharf and tying up.
Well, and that's, I was going to say,
he could have been right on the city front.
Yeah, we now own Union Wharf and City Dock with, maybe that would have been the better choice.
Well, yeah, I mean, I sure as heck would have tied a boat up there if all I had to do is bring it over to the 300-ton travel lift in the afternoon. Because getting them in here sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an option we need to give staff.
Absolutely.
Staff, if a 100-foot boat comes in and we can't accommodate them,
offer them Union Wharf.
Because we have a floating portion of Union Wharf that's 120 feet long.
That's a good option. As a matter of fact, I think that might even be quite popular once people figure it out.
Is that part of Norwich's
purvey?
So they could have directed him to that, that spot.
And City Dock also.
But that would have been Point Hudson, but that's an operational thing.
This is such a seldom occurrence. You know, vessel size that we need to kind of.
Well, those are two really viable
alternatives. Remember that we have these other two facilities that we didn't have.
Yeah, and it would be a heck of a lot easier to put a boat up against there than it would be in here, because this is just too small.
The only thing I want to double check is the depth.
Yeah.
You know, both of them.
Yeah.
Low tide.
But the business about having no literature or information on town versus some.
Yeah,
I think we kind of blew that.
Well, we have a whole library right there next to the check-in. Now, obviously, we didn't give him that.
Right.
But there is an entire library of all the brochures, a Marine Trades Guide. Everything is right there next to the registration desk. But we need to tell people that there's information about.
Somehow we should get the Chamber of Commerce involved and get a packet that we could hand to visiting people that have restaurants, whatever activities are ongoing at that point, and,
And we've talked to both the chamber and the Main Street. Main Street really is the organization,
But they never have come through.
They never, we've asked, I got this idea from Port of Edmonds, that, you know, really especially in the summertime, during the height where we get these yacht clubs coming every weekend, they have a little little sack or a bag, you know, with, you know, 10% off at the Silverwater, and, you know, 10% off at this store, you know, map of the town, all that, and it's been the most difficult, but, we can throw that up in the air again.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, for a tourist town, or one that prides on itself,
yeah. Well, you know, one would think that when they came up to the employee and said, I'd like to moor my 125-foot sailboat at your pier, that the employee would actually go, the light bulb would turn on, and they go, you know, we have a rack here with some information of local services and where the gas station is and so forth. If you're at all curious, while you moor your, you know, they go, oh, there must be more than one person on that boat, you know, 125-foot, you know.
Here's all the local beer parlors.
Yeah. You know, just kind of spark on that one a little bit.
Do they still do the menu guide?
No.
Yeah, they used to have a really nice, every restaurant had the actual menu in this little newspaper kind of magazine that we used to hand out a lot, and I haven't seen that for years.
So I mean, if you gave me a call when I was working as a salesperson at Towns of Bay Marine, I would have been down on that dock in about 3.5 minutes.
You'll find that.
I've seen stuff on the ferry before Towns of Bay.
We have both. You know, Point Hudson does it more than here because it's all transient down there, but we'll talk to staff.
You're right.
We'll more talk to
staff. Do a better job.
Yeah, just politely, you know. I mean, you know, 125-foot sailboat.
Probably at least two people on there.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for commissioner comments, I presume. Any more? Our next meeting will be Wednesday, October 23rd. At 6:30 p.m. here, and I'm going to adjourn this meeting for an executive session to speak to some legal matters. This commission meeting is adjourned.